Shire is a leading global specialty biopharmaceutical company with a focus on helping people with life-altering conditions to lead better lives. While Shire's portfolio of ADHD medicines helps patients diagnosed with ADHD, we recognize the need to provide additional support to them and their families. And that's why we at Shire value our local, regional, and international partnerships that are designed to develop and enhance programs to improve the understanding and awareness of ADHD. At Shire, people diagnosed with ADHD have our full attention. To learn more about Shire, visit www.shire.com.
To Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is February the 1st in the year 2011 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our topic tonight, ADHD, transitioning from adolescent to adult, and with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Timothy Willens. We're going to get into the meat of the show in just a second. But first, have you ever lost your phone, wallet, or car keys? If you're like many people with ADHD, you tend to get ahead of yourself and accidentally leave important stuff behind. Foundit can help. Foundit will give you a unique ID number and ways to label the stuff you misplaced, like your camera, notebook, backpack, laptop, or jacket. When someone finds your stuff, they simply enter the information from the label in Foundit's secure system, and you get identified instantly. Just go to foundit.net to learn more, or you can go to facebook.com/attentiontalkradio, click on the Advertisers and Giveaway tab, and register for your chance to win a free premium 2-year Foundit membership. While you're at our Facebook page, and again, that's facebook.com/attentiontalkradio, like our page, and or at the same Advertisers and Giveaways tab, you can enter your email address, and we'll add you to our bi-monthly newsletter, which is full of just information about the show, and we'll actually send you a list of upcoming programs. Note, while you're on our Facebook page, you can actually archive, you can access archive shows, you can listen to the show live, and actually you can see a lineup of the scheduled shows that we have out. But enough of that. You're here for our topic, and again, that's transitioning from adolescence to adult, and again with us is Dr. Timothy Willens. He's Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. He's also the Director of Substance Abuse Services in the Clinical and Research Program in the Pediatric Psychopharmacology Area at Massachusetts General Hospital. His research interests include the relationship among ADHD, bipolar, and substance abuse, and the psychopharmacology of ADHD and juvenile bipolar disorders across lifespan. He's written more than 200 peer-reviewed articles, 60 published book chapters, 300 abstracts and presentations nationally and internationally. He's a distinguished fellow at the American Psychiatric Association and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Dr. Willens is consistently named among the best of Boston and the best doctors in America. And with that, Dr. Willens, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Willens, I'm very excited about today's show. Part of this was motivated by listening to you speak in Orlando at the CHAD conference. I think the title of your topic was Growing Up Teens with ADHD, Here's What's Happening. And what really struck me was the stuff that was taking place, really transitioning from adolescent to adult. And it seems that that stage of life, you know, the worlds kind of collide in the transition, but it's especially true for those with ADHD. So can you speak to some of the unique issues that present themselves for those with ADHD at that time?
Well, it's a real issue in terms of this is the time where you're really launching kids from their youth into the beginning of their adulthood. And it's a time that's, quite frankly, relatively orphaned in terms of our understanding. It's also a time, by the way, I would just say parenthetically, that often they're changing caregivers. They're going from their pediatrician or a child psychiatrist or whomever to another practitioner. They're moving away from their house. A lot of action is occurring. A lot of things are occurring. We know some of the things that occur, for example, is that the brain continues to develop. The idea that at the age of 17 or 18, that's it, brain development is over, you're done maturing, is just not correct. Mm-hmm. We know that the brain continues to develop all the way up until age 30. But we also know there are other things. There's a lot of transition issues that occur. There's if the kid is going on to college, for example, or vocational school, there's more demands for school. If they're going on into their own occupation, they're becoming independent. If they're driving, their driving responsibilities only increase. It's a time where you have more socialization. They're mm-hmm. leaving their nuclear families. They're becoming more connected with other kids, and that becomes sort of their families by proxy. And then the last thing I'll say before I stop for a second is that this is the time that these kids start running into problems with things like substance abuse, cigarette smoking, and other types of issues that may invade in their ADHD.
In your presentation in Orlando, you talked about the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex and that type of stuff, and I want to get to that in a second. But at the beginning, you talked about you're really you've grown up with a pediatrician. And now you're moving out of a pediatrician out into like a family doctor or other mental health professional. It seems to me that that's a little bit more challenging than expected because my perception, and I don't know if this is right, is there's much more pediatricians that are more comfortable with diagnosing and treating or prescribing meds if that's something you subscribe to. And when you move into family practices, they're not as comfortable with that. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think you're absolutely correct. I think it's very difficult. I think it becomes awkward for individuals who are this age to reach out to other practitioners, and practitioners may not know all of the exact questions to ask, particularly if you're talking about adult practitioners, adult psychiatrists or adult internists who are going to be taking over the care. They may not know all the questions, and it's an awkward stage to be sort of revealing yourself. I saw a 20-year-old college student today who, you know, was just wonderful in talking to me, but it took a lot of prodding and questions that weren't spontaneous by the person. And if, you know, I work with kids, I work with adolescents, adults, had I not prodded so much and asked a lot of these questions about her childhood and things that tracks of the disorder and clues to me that there was a problem there, I'm not sure it would have been so easy for her to talk about it and somebody would have understood what she was saying and maybe not get the diagnosis.
Wow, I just had a little bit of an aha when you were describing that because I suddenly realized that if you're transitioning from, let's say, high school to college and you're 18, you know, maybe we're sitting in the office with a pediatrician and they understood it and your parents were there at the visit, you know, articulating mm-hmm. this. So now all of a sudden you're moving out of that environment, you're dealing with something else, and maybe the person's not as confident even to have those conversations. So A, it might be more difficult to find the right physician to kind of help you with it, but in addition to that, you might not as be confident to have that conversation. So it's even more complicated than I really thought, because it seems to me that can be a real challenge specifically for certain people.
I think you're right on, and I think it's understated, quite frankly, that this is now an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old who's having their first independent conversation with a physician alone that's going to be the basis to your relationship moving forward. And it can be pretty official feeling and intimidating at some point. So I think you were right on when you said it can sometimes be difficult for this age group to really walk in and establish a relationship and make it and have the practitioner feel comfortable enough to make a diagnosis and move forward with treatment.
I also want to highlight, when I was in Orlando over the chat meeting, I also said another presentation. I know Dr. Russ Ramsey, who we've had on the show, is there with a whole host of people, and I know he's a part of this. There's an organization that's trying to get together a package and to help educate family practitioners in internal medicine across the country for resources, because they realize that many of them out there, particularly in rural areas, are uncomfortable with diagnosing ADHD and prescribing stimulants in that type of situation. Again, I'm just throwing out there to highlight that sometimes when you're moving from the pediatrician environment to internal family guy, that a lot of them out there, particularly in areas where there's not as large a selection, is more difficult. So that's one particular. Another area I want to touch on real quick until we get into some of this other stuff is in your presentation, you alluded to legal issues actually change too, right?
Well, they do. And when you're younger and there's some altercations or, issues that may have come up, you're – first of all, it's going to be largely exonerated from that with good behavior, et cetera. But when you're 18, you're now responsible for your actions. You're responsible for your treatment, which is one component of it. And then if there's behaviors, bad behavior or aberrant behavior, you're going to own it, and it's going to be much more difficult moving forward. If you are pulled over for having substances or something in your car, if you're doing something that may cause difficulty, if you mouth off or get into a fight, you're responsible now. And then, like you said, going back to the treatment issue, at the age of 18, all of the son, you're the one who is responsible for your treatment. All treatment decisions now are going to largely rely on your judgment. Now, I also want to make a comment that it is my solid belief that because you're age 18 does not mean that your parents shouldn't be in the room. I'm one of the believers that your parents and your family are still very important and critical in your life, and I encourage parents to be involved. But legally, it really is the call of the individual at that point.
Legally and sometimes geographically. I know I went to college, you know, a day's drive away from my parents, so sometimes it's not feasible. So, but all this is just – it's interesting because all this is really changing virtually by changing from 17 to 18 in this transitional process of becoming an adult, that you have those you have normal adolescents making that transition too, but this is another layer that's just a little bit more that you have to deal with ADHD. Dr. Williams, I want to kind of cut to a break real quick and come back, and I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things you talked about the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex, to kind of talk about some of the addiction and substance issues. But before we do that, and before we go to break, can you tell everybody about your book and how they might get a copy of it?
Sure. Well, my book it's called Straight Talk About Psychiatric Medications for Kids, and it's really for parents who have kids, including ADHD and often the co-occurring problems with ADHD, all the different disorders. It's just sort of a parent's guide to using psychotropic meds. It's based on sort of working with lots and lots of families. It's based on data in terms of the correctness of the medicines, the dosage, et cetera. But it's a guide to help you sort of navigate those strains. It's a very stressful time for parents when they think they have to medicate their adolescents, their children. And this helps, my hope is that this then provides sort of a roadmap to understand when do you use meds, what are the correct meds, and what are the main side effects and things to worry about.
And to get that, they can go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble's,
I presume.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right. It's all over, but those are two great places to locate it.
All right. With that, we'll be right back after this message.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and, of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
This is your ADHD information station, Attention Talk Radio. You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. We have Dr. Timothy Willens in our virtual studio, and we're talking about the transition from adolescent to adult. Before the break, we kind of overviewed a little bit of the space, and two particular areas we talked about were the legal issues and the change of the medical landscape in this transition, which are, when you think about it, really pretty significant. Dr. Williams, in a second, I want to kind of talk, I would like you to talk to everybody about the discussion that you had in Orlando about the limbic system, the prefrontal cortex. But before we do that, I just want, if you're listening to the show and you're an adolescent, you have somebody in the space, I encourage you to look back in our archives because we have some shows that I think you might be interested. October 21st of 2011, we had Shire and Edge on talking about ADHD scholarships that are being provided for the 2012-2013 year, complete with a full year of free coaching. Back August 3rd of 2011, I had an interview talking about the transition from high school to college. In July the 6th of 2011, we talked about college placement for those with ADHD. And on December 2nd, 2010, we had a show talking about ADHD coaching teens and managing teens in that situation. So I encourage you, if this is of interest, go back and check out our archives. So, Dr. Willens, as I mentioned, talk to us about the development of the brain, the limbic system, and the prefrontal cortex, because I think this will be helpful as we start to move into addiction and other things that can influence those with ADHD in this age range a little bit more significantly.
Sure. First of all, I want to reiterate that a lot of the work that I'm talking about comes from a number of different neuroimaging studies, including a lot of work from the National Institutes of Health, which really have helped us understand that the brain continues to develop through adolescence and really up until, in some cases, the age of 30. So this transitional age group, which is where really we're talking about, 16 to 25, 26 in that area, is still in the major component of development. And when we're talking about development, the brain typically develops from the back to the front, and the front is the frontal lobes. And to remind people, the front part of the brain is very important in ADHD. It's very involved in what we call executive functions. The secretary of the brain. It governs emotions. It's involved in judgment and people's planning, organization, your problem solving, your inhibition, and also some other issues, synthesis, etc. And what we think is that that's later development, a little bit later development. It takes a lot longer. And that's why I think people know intuitively as your kids grow up that they start to develop some maturation. They start to get better at planning and all of these executive operations when they go to college, but they still continue to mature and have better judgment. And these are areas that we know develop later in life. Contrast that with earlier in life, another area of the brain we call the limbic system, which develops earlier. So this is related to your emotional circuitry, emotion, your arousal, getting agitated and angry, reward, I want this, and you can imagine reward in terms of substances and cigarettes, your appetite, risky behavior, and no surprise, sex and things like that. And this is influenced by a lot by hormonal influences. And what I want to comment on is that the development of this system, sort of this I need it, I want it, sex, reward, food, emotion, actually comes in a bit earlier than the oversight to that, which is the front part of the brain, which dampens it down, sort of the shock absorbers, So this, what I call the symmetry between the development of that, can lead to a lot of issues, can lead to dysregulated mood, frustration, irritability, temper. And we question, is that exaggerated in ADHD, the difference between the slow front part that dampens and the emotional part that comes on earlier in life? And that's all occurring during this period of time. So sometimes the hot-headed adolescent, what are you thinking? Your parents are going, what were you thinking? Why did you're not thinking, you're responding to your emotions. All of these issues probably are correct, and it could be the brain's fault.
So, by the way, I've got one of those teenagers myself, and what I'm hearing you say is that the prefrontal cortex, the planning, the stuff that dampens, is developing slower. The limbic system, which is the impulsive emotional side, is developing quicker. So there's this gap that is there many times with adolescents, but it's the distance between that gap is much greater with those with ADHD.
It is, and it's partly because the front part of the brain, we think, is developing, but it's, all our data is showing that it gets there, but it takes longer to get there.
And so the reason I asked you to kind of frame this out is, we can kind of look at a teenager and see some of that stuff, but at this point in time of life, you have your social circles and all that type of stuff, but when it starts to come to impulsive decisions, particularly like addiction and maybe driving and sex and stuff like that, talk about the impact on that for those with ADHD, and if you could speak to, probabilities of early usage or early problems and or likelihood of some of these things would be helpful?
Well, this is an area that I'm very personally concerned about, and an area of research that myself and our lab and others have looked at, and I can tell you that the number is pretty easy to remember in terms of what your likelihood is if you have ADHD. It is unfortunate. It is not fair, but you are twice as likely, essentially, across the lifespan to have problems with cigarette use, substance abuse, and to get into a motor vehicle accident. And it continues. It's that two times as likely, and that's a big risk. So, you know, when we talk to kids who are at that age, for example, I was talking to this patient today, I was very concerned about cigarette smoking. Now, just smokes a few once in a while. But if even when you don't have ADHD, you worry about just a few cigarettes. But for somebody who has a lot of ADHD or has ADHD, it makes it much easier. It becomes like super glue. It sticks when you start mm-hmm. smoking. And the same with people who start, this is a time they're leaving home, they're living alone and working, or they're going to college, or they're going to voc schools, and all of a sudden they have the freedom, the availability of drugs, et cetera. And what I say is, you know, at least if you start using drugs, it can really rapidly escalate. And it's the nature of the ADHD, and it's probably related to what we're talking about. We're trying to figure out what it is. Some of it's self-medication, can't dampen, it's mood symptoms, and a lot of this comes back to your frontal part of your brain, which is just not able to dampen it as much as your emotional and the limbic side, which says, give me more drugs, I like the reward, I like the feeling. That's too strong to dampen in a lot of these kids. So the antidote to that is you really have to stay away from drugs and alcohol, and if they're using any drugs and alcohol, they have to be on top of it. They have to know there's a huge risk, and every time you drink, you got to ask yourself the question, do I really need the next drink? Is this mm-hmm. what am I doing this for? Am I on top of this?
You're twice as likely to abuse. Is there a probability, too, that you're more likely to try it earlier?
Yes. It's a double whammy. So especially in the untreated state. So if you've not been treated for ADHD, you're more likely to start cigarette smoking or drinking or using drugs earlier, and you're about twice as likely to have a problem across the lifespan, to the point where we've learned that if you're not treated and you have ADHD into adulthood, so if you just you let somebody go and they – about half of adults with ADHD have a history of using either drugs or alcohol to excess.
Half.
It's a big number.
That's a huge number. That's half.
It's a huge number. In fact, when we work with a lot of adults, I ask that question, and it's really the number, and you'll start hearing these stories, you know, and it's usually around this age group. How old were you? 19, 20, 21. How much were you drinking? I was drinking 8 to 12 drinks a day for a period of time, where I was smoking a blunt a day and was missing school, or I dropped out of college because of it. The stories are remarkable, and they're consistent.
Wow. That's a huge number, half of adults. So I tell you what, I need to run to another break. Again, the title of your book is?
Straight Talk About Psychiatric Meds for Kids.
Straight Talk About Psychiatric Meds for Kids. Again, Amazon.com is your local bookstore or whatever. Dr. Williams, when we come back, you said untreated a second ago. I want to come
yep.
back and talk about what is treated and what impact that has. Again, that's after the break, but with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We have Dr. Timothy Willens in our virtual studios. Top of the show, we talked about legal issues and the changing health care front for those in this transitional period. In the last break, we were talking about the development of the brain, addictions and stuff, and the increased probability of those with ADHD to experiment with substances, and I would presume sex would be included in that earlier in a higher likelihood. Before the break, Dr. Williams, you talked about on an untreated basis. When you say untreated, what would treatment be, and how do those numbers change if you are receiving treatment?
It's an important question, and treatment now has been really expanded. So you have non-pharmacologic treatments that really help, these very focused, proactive, cognitive behavioral type therapies that we know work in adults. There have been a couple big studies recently. And then we have medications, which usually include the stimulant class agents and now a host of non-stimulants. What we know is, and what we're concerned about, first of all, is that often we're doing a good job treating our kids, but when they start leaving the house, they go to college, they go on their own, often the treatment drops down, the adherence drops precipitously. And the problem is, this is the time they're working independently on their schooling or in their jobs, they're trying to negotiate their own social situations, they're driving, and this is a time that they really need their medications, and often they come off of their medications. And the other issue is substance abuse, and we have good data that shows that there's a very positive, effective treatment on reducing ADHD and reducing the rates of cigarette smoking and improving and reducing the onset of substance use disorder. So it really reduces and delays the onset of both of those outcomes through adolescence. That's the good news. The bad news is you start to lose that effect into adulthood, and we think that's because most of the people stop their treatment.
One of the things that I remember you saying, the barriers to adherence here is a belief system. The patient may feel it's better to overcome the problems without resorting to medication. In other words, the idea is just like, hey, if I'm going to do this, I just need to lick the problem myself. I don't need help.
That's exactly right. And a lot of them also get tired of thinking that I take this medicine because I have ADHD. So if I don't take the medicine, I don't have the disorder. If I can battle this, I really don't have ADHD. And a lot of kids struggle. And it's a real problem that they're struggling at the time they're leaving and they're starting their jobs or they're working at school. And it can be a really problematic failure for them because the ADHD comes back, they underachieve, and they've started on a bad foot. So it's my recommendation is to continue treatment through the first year, let's say, of college. And if the kid still doesn't think they need the medicine, by the way, half the time they'll stop on their own. But if they is to try a brief period off at a time that they can afford to come off when they don't have major exams, and if they're only if they're ahead of the material at the time.
So what I'm hearing you saying is that many times in this transitional period, they're moving adulthood, they're into college. These are the times that the adherence to like medications if they were off, but at the same time they're given more freedom and more decision making authority than they've ever had before, which translate not only just in sex and drugs, but also in driving and other types of behaviors. And it's like this for all adolescents, but it's compounded, I guess, really for those with ADHD. Accurate?
It is. It is. And on top of that, at that time, the parents are used to parents who have really had to focus on their kids and really had to been very involved in the child's life, you know, really providing that executive functioning for the kid. That goes away too. They're leaving the house, so they lose often mom, but it's not just mom. It could be dad or whoever, a coach, who's really been connected to the kid and helping them. And they lose that. They're living independently. And you can just imagine the potential catastrophe when it comes to management of the symptoms.
So in a big picture, we talked about the healthcare landscape and stuff, and that's a little bit kind of getting ahead of the curve and expecting that transition, maybe looking for the right doctor well before they make that transition and doing some research. And we talked about the legal issues. The best way to prevent that is not to get into it. But the issues that we're talking about right now, the traditional thing is to educate your kids on drugs, just kind of say no. Would you say that I'm a little bit thinking out loud right now, because if education's there, do you believe that it's helpful to educate your kids if they have ADHD, not just about drugs and alcohol, but actually some of the statistical data that we've talked about here or that you've talked about, that you're more likely to start earlier and it's more likely that you'll have an issue with it, and that one statistic you discussed earlier, like half the adults have had an abuse problem in adulthood. Do you believe that would be an effective way to kind of help combat this?
I do. Absolutely. I think education is critical here, and I think commenting on that and letting people know, and again, twice the risk. Look, we don't want you to become, your friends are going to use drugs, your friends are going to drink. I don't want to be a prude, but the reason I don't want you to is because you're more likely to be an addict. You're more likely to get addicted. And really talking to kids about that, they hear it. Now, they're going to still use, they're going to try, but they at least get that message and they know. And I think, and in addition to that, you know, and that's in context to understanding your ADHD and who you are as a person and other healthy habits like you talked about, you know, sort of their sexual identity and what they're doing sexually, as well as exercise and appetite and sleeping appropriately, all of these types of things, it's in context too. But I think one of the most feared outcomes for our precious children as they grow up is drugs and alcohol at that age, and driving because of the inference of what happens mm-hmm. with motor vehicle accidents.
With all that being said, again, I'm thinking about, if you're an adolescent out there listening to this, you're motivated to do this, so that's totally awesome. But most likely, our listeners are parents. And I think we've outlined this well in the education stuff there, but I'm throwing out a concept. I'm very active in scouts, and I'm a high-adventure scout master here in Tampa. I deal with the older boys. We go hiking on the AT and do some stuff. And I have to tell you, it's very interesting. A parent can tell their kid something, and it's like garbage. I'm not their parent, but many times I can have much more of an impact in dealing with their kids by just explaining it because I'm not their parents. And there's coaches out there, and I'm not saying that you have to go to the coach, but there's sometimes to seek people outside your family that can kind of help with a teenager, to me sometimes might be beneficial. Because I got my own teenager, and sometimes I'll literally walk up to another adult and say, can you tell my kid this? Because
right.
It won't mean anything if I say it, but if you say it, it might make some sense. Can you speak to that? Does that make any sense, or do you have any other?
It does, and I think, first of all, I think, Let's not short sell. Parents are critical, and your kids actually hear what you're saying, particularly in adolescence, even though you're getting sparks and comments and all of these things back at you. But they actually do hear you, and that actually has a very positive impact on later behaviors, particularly drugs, alcohol, cigarettes. So parents have to help. Doctors can really help, or practitioners can really help. Just a comment. Doctors' involvement and discussions like this actually are very positive, but you don't do it once. You do it every single time you see the kid. And as you said, you start early and you talk about them. I have my launch to college or launch of independence conversation with all kids with ADHD where I see them alone and we talk about this. And I look eye to eye and I talk, and it's exactly what you said. I don't scare them with reefer madness and stuff, but I just make it, I personalize it and what my fear is for them and how not to have that happen. And I think we need other things. All the other professionals that work with kids with ADHD can help also with this.
What struck me is the launch to college, and you actually meet with them alone.
I do. I think, you know, I think we talk about a lot of things. For example, talking to kids about understanding what ADHD is, to seek accommodations if they're going to college or working, develop positive self-care habits, good sleep, eating reasonably, some exercise, stress management. Creating structure. Don't take, if you're on meds, don't take them PRN, take them every day. Take a reduced load when you first start school. Make use of available study skills and time management classes, coaches. And the other thing is, I always tell them, hey, look, sign a release so the parents can work with the school personnel. There's no problem with that. It's good that your parents are involved. But I have that sort of outline, and I do that with all kids leaving, moving on, because I'm worried about it. Now, I'll continue to follow them because mm-hmm. of the nature of my practice, but these are the issues that need to be dealt with as kids are leaving. There needs to be this lattice around them as they move on to the next stage of their life.
As we talked about, this was interesting. There was another presentation I sat in when I was over in Orlando at the CHED meeting, and actually might be doing a show this. There was two gentlemen that were former police officers in the UK talking about ADHD and the court system and usual stuff. And anyway, where I'm going with this is they were talking about some different things that you should do in that particular situation, but they said if you do get that phone call and your kid's in jail and you're a parent and you have ADHD, one of the notions is, are you the right person to go down to the police station and deal with that situation? In other words, is your own impulsivity, if you're out of control, are you really the right person to kind of make that decision, make that happen? And the reason I'm bringing that up is, in the same time, sometimes in the genre of dealing with your adolescent that's moving towards teens, you know, sometimes you can say that message, but as you're sitting down with the launch of the college and having that conversation alone, sometimes those types of things can be best handled by other trusted either professionals or people that are relatively close to you. And it's very easy to say, hey, listen, this is what I'm trying to message here as a means to try to help help deal with the situation, because after all, particularly sometimes with ADHD parents who might be emotional situations, dealing with an ADHD kid, diffusing that situation and using some resources around you might be an effective strategy.
Well, I can't say it better than that. All I can say to add to what you're saying is that this is a process. So it isn't just a one conversation. I think these are repeated conversations that occur as a child, you know, is 16, 17, 18, so that when the handoff is finally made, they're ready for it. So it's not just, oh, by the way, we need to have this conversation. We need to have a number of conversations to get you up, to set you up. And I think most parents do that during that sort of separation phase. And then I would just comment on the upcoming show that you're going to have. I know that the individuals from the United Kingdom, they're terrific. They're unbelievable. I'm plugging for your show because I know them. When I was overseas, talked to them. They're extraordinarily progressive about the issues of ADHD. I would say world progressive. I have not met other people in law enforcement that have such a clairvoyant view about this and where things need to go. So that's going to be a terrific show.
Yeah, we're hoping to do that and add it to the package of shows of the ones I had mentioned to earlier. Dr. Williams, before we kind of wrap things up, do you have any last insights or anything that you'd like to share with our audience that you think would be useful for them?
The only thing I would say is that I see this as a critical time because this is the beginning of their adult life. And I think people have worked so extraordinarily hard. Parents have really worked, as well as all the other professionals, to get kids through all of the early years who have ADHD, and that next step, we need to put more energy back into the next step, launching them to the beginning of their adulthood, because when we look at the impairments, when we look at the problems that adults have, this is where a lot of them are beginning, and I think we can't take our eye off the ball, our foot off the accelerator. We need to be there with them, and we need to come up with better strategies and realize that even though they're young adults, they really are just growing up children still and can use our support. And I think you do that and you're going to have a much happier young adult that hopefully, if it's your child, remains very successful as they grow up.
Well, Dr. Williams, I'd like to thank you very much. I was expecting this to be a great show. It's better than what I ever dreamed. Thank you very much for coming on. Listeners out there, I hope that you found this very informative. Again, look back in our archives because we have several shows that are related to this particular age group that I think you'll find useful, and we hope to have more. So, again, Dr. Williams, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It's great.
Everybody, stay tuned to Attention Talk Radio. Next week, we're going to have a great show for you. Take care.